intro.
Hey gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio. This is Thursday. Well, yes, it is Thursday. It's not Friday because Friday is the start of Passover, and we're very Orthodox. I mean, we're very serious goyim here. And we always record on Thursday night anyway. But Friday's, it's Good Friday. It's the first day of Passover, and markets will be closed, so you're not missing anything. It is fabulous, fun, financial Filbert Friday.
Here we are.
Here we are. But before we get into the finance, we were just talking about the Sacramento stuff. Black Lives Matter. And for those of you in the audience who don't pay attention to the mainstream media, I catch it through the PBS Pause Hour, or News Hour. Mr. T, thank you for your service. Do you hear him scratching back there?
Yes.
Okay. Anyway, the big news in the mainstream media is this Stephon Clark, who was an unarmed black man shot by Sacramento police. By the way, by a black police officer and a white police officer. This transpired after there were reports. There was certainly a caller that we can hear on the released video from the police department who was describing somebody in a hoodie who was smashing in car windows and stealing things. And you can see from the helicopter footage a person who was wound up being somebody in a hoodie who was running through backyards, jumping over fences, as there was a police helicopter above, and then there were the two officers involved in the shooting who chased him down. You've got the footage from the body cams, and they told the person to drop the gun or drop what, you know, whatever it is, put your hands up and drop the gun. And then you hear a bunch of shooting, and then the guy's dead. This transpired at night. Now, I don't want to get, it's not, for me, it's not so much a matter of, this particular shooting, but there, we have to talk about it a little bit.
Right.
So, who was this guy, Stephon Clark? Was he the person who was breaking in car windows and stealing things? I mean, it's plausible. I'm not going to pass judgment there, but it's plausible. And I don't think there's any other suspects, people who were wearing hoodies in the neighborhood. Certainly the police helicopter didn't have anybody else they were looking at, it seems. But I'm not going to pass judgment on that. But who was he before that? Well, he's 22 years old. He had been out of jail or out of prison for a month. Why was he in prison? Well, he had been convicted for pimping, robbery, and domestic violence.
Oh, you don't say.
You don't say. And
you did say.
Of course, he was a family man. He was a family man. He had a one-year-old. And
one he didn't do. How many didn't do? Did he have?
I don't know. He had two. No, he had two. He had two little 1-year-old and a 3-year-old, and then there was some. In the picture they show, there was some smiling woman. She has a Hispanic sounding name. She was of I don't know if she was of African descent or mestizo or what, but at any rate, so he was apparently living in the house of the yard where he was shot, and that was his grandparents' house. So if he had been in jail and then was living with his grandparents, the likelihood that he was actually supporting these two offspring are microscopic. So it's, I don't want to get into whether this guy, whether this guys shooting was justified or what have you. I have loads of sympathy with police. They're in this difficult position. But I don't want to get into this guy's case in particular so much. But here's the thing. Like, Kevin McDonald has talked about Black Lives Matter as the point of Black Lives Matter is to make crime safer for black people to commit.
Yeah. And I didn't know he said that. That guy is so smart. He's right. That's very true.
He is right. I mean,
I remember hearing one of their advocates saying, yeah, how places like Walmart shouldn't prosecute petty theft anymore.
Well, see, this is the thing. You look at the Black Lives Matter martyrs, and you've got, I don't know if Trayvon Martin predated Black Lives Matter or if he's the source of it, but you have him. You've got who's the guy in East Saint in Ferguson, Missouri? Brown, Michael Brown.
Yeah, I believe that's what started it all. It may have predated that a little bit, but not like on the scale that it had. Yeah, when Michael Brown got shot.
And then there's this guy in Baton Rouge whose name slips my mind. He was kind of like borderline retarded in and out of jail. He also had, I think he had a bunch of kids, which he couldn't support. There is this guy in Staten Island, Eric Garner in Staten Island. The guy in Baton Rouge was named Alton Sterling. You had 13-year-old Tamir Rice in Cleveland. Oh, who else? I mean, there was this guy in Chicago. I don't know how much of a Black Lives Matter martyr he became, but he had been a one-man crime wave. He was on PCP. He had smashed a bunch of windows in a new car lot, and I guess he had smashed his way into the office of the new car place, and then he was running down an interstate, got shot in the back. But you've got all these martyrs, and really, in every case, let's leave Tamir Rice aside for a second, but Eric Garner in Staten Island was maybe one of the more sympathetic cases, and he wound up not being shot, but he was choked while he was resisting arrest, and he was very heavy, and he was put in a chokehold and wound up dying. And, you know, so it's a more sympathetic case, but even in his case, he was committing a petty crime. It was a petty crime, selling loose cigarettes. But when the police came, he refused to cooperate and resisted arrest. You've got the Tamir Rice guy, 13 years old. I mean, you know, you can look at that as a tragedy. Oh, you can look at any of them as a tragedy, but 13 years old. But, of course, he was like something like 5'8 and 180 pounds. He was adult-sized. And it was a black woman who called 911 saying that there was somebody with a gun at the park. And so, you know, to try to pin that on white racism when you've got this black lady calling 911 about somebody, you know, waving a gun at people in the park, it all gets stretched. But you get down to, you look at Alton Sterling at bunch of kids, and Garner had a bunch of kids, and maybe Garner might have been supporting his kids, but, you know, supporting them through this type of thing. Most of them have these criminal records. Alton Sterling had spent time in jail for statutory rape. So these are their martyrs and their saints. And of course, for every Alton Sterling or whomever that winds up getting shot by police, you've got tons and tons of black criminals who are maybe getting caught and getting sent to jail and maybe not getting caught and are out loose. And you do have police officers who are shot in the line of duty. I mean, I'm not sure what the scorecard is. If you've got like maybe 200 something police killings per year, you might have 60 police who are shot in the course of the year. So it might be a 3-to-1 ratio or 4-to-1 ratio or 5-to-1 ratio. But, I mean, if you are a government entity, is it, what do you do? Do you say, okay, we are going to, in order to reduce the number of black criminals who get shot, how many people are we going to let get away with crimes? How many police officers are going to have to, delay the use of force in protecting themselves? How many of them do you want to sacrifice? It gets very, very complicated. So the current discourse, especially in the mainstream media, is, you know, what can police do to reduce this? What they, is there implicit, do they need more implicit bias training? Do we need to change the protocols for use of force? And all the burdens being put on the police, whose job has to be getting more and more difficult.
And, yeah, there's no question about that.
And of course, there's no discussion about, to what extent do all of the black criminals who commit crime and, you know, either get arrested or get away with it, but this massive black crime wave, which has been ongoing for decades, here's my proposal, okay, in order to, you know, I'm a social scientist, and of course, scientists like to conduct experiments. It's not always easy to conduct social science experiments, but here's the experiment I propose to determine whether or not there really is this racial bias. My proposal is, let's just say for a period of 1 year, we can, maybe Al Sharpton can help out with this, we get blacks to reduce their crime rates to the same as whites for a year, just for an experiment, okay? And at the end of the year, blacks will hold down their crime rate for an entire year. At the end of the year, we'll go back and we'll see if that has had an effect on police shootings. What do you think of that?
I think you'd have to convince people that race exists first. for some people, at least.
Right.
I don't know. That's what I thought immediately. It's like, man, I don't even... That's an interesting concept, but I don't even think we're that far yet. Like, people... There's some people who don't even think race exists. That's ridiculous. But that, I like what you proposed there. That's it's very interesting.
You know, it's like... Well, the case of Alton Sterling, he was selling bootleg videos in front of a convenience store. That's not why he was called. The police were called in. The police were called in because somebody in that parking lot, and apparently it was Alton Sterling, was waving a gun at somebody. And maybe he was waving a gun at somebody who was hassling him for whatever reason. But of course, as a convicted felon, he wasn't allowed to have a gun and didn't cooperate with police when they came and all of this. But, you know, it's not like I'd like to see people get shot. And that's not it. But the current discussion, the Black Lives Matter demonstrations, we all know that not only are they not going to make things better, they're just going to make things worse. Is there going to come a time, I know it's on the fringes already, but is there going to come a time when the mainstream is going to start having voices saying, you know, like if this guy comes and struts across the floor, struts across the city council chamber, puts his sunglasses in, jumps up on the mayor's desk and says, "Shut the F up," which is what this Stephon Clark's brother did to the mayor of the Jewish mayor of Sacramento. Is there going to come a time when in the mainstream you're going to have voices saying, "Look, okay, if you don't like it, let's just separate. You can go have your own country. Let's talk about where your country is going to be, and then you can police yourself." You know, I mean, you hear that on the fringes. You hear that in the alt-right. You know, you'll hear Richard Spencer or other people talk in these terms, but of course, it's not serious talk at this point. Are you ever going to hear that? Is there going to come a time when you would hear Ann Coulter or even Tucker Carlson talking in terms like that?
About race and shootings?
About look, if you're so upset about shootings, if you're so upset about microaggressions, if you're so upset about this, maybe you should just form your own society. I mean, it's not, you don't hear that voice in the mainstream. It's not in the mainstream.
I don't think either of them would, actually.
No, and I'm just raising them as two individuals, but people in the mainstream, how are we at all? I mean, it's unthinkable now. Is it going to be unthinkable in 2 years, 4 years, 6 years?
Are you talking about like splitting, like up, a, like maybe a state for
something?
Blacks and whites?
I mean, I'm not making a proposal. In a lot of ways, I think it's unrealistic. But my question is that type of exasperated talk, how far is that from coming into the mainstream? Because you do hear it on the fringes.
Well, that's true. And this would go back to what I've said a couple times, is that I think the media has to change before we'll get the financial head of the snake to change. No, I don't think that will change, because everybody has a Jewish boss still. And there's no way that the discord is going to change.
Well, here's something. And now we're starting to go back into the financial, for the Financial Friday. I just saw a report on the nightly business report from CNBC. And the households, when I was growing up, everybody had TV, and you'd get it through the antenna. Some people had antennas on the roof. If you were in the right area, you didn't need antennas on the roof, but it was coming broadcast. And then in the 1980s, you had this transformation that was coming through the cable. And now you've got this transformation where like something like half the households are streaming and not getting their TV and media through the cable. They're getting it through streaming. Streaming services as opposed to cable services.
Does that include like YouTube? YouTube isn't.
Well, yeah. Streaming. Yeah. I mean, it does include that. So.
Okay.
That's a fundamental transformation. You're talking about the media would have to change. Well, the media is.
It is slowly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right.
But of course, if you look at the streaming, who are the leaders? I mean, so much of it is either Netflix or I guess what is it, Amazon Prime, something like that. Amazon
right.
has a streaming service, and new media does tend to be the Wild West. Even radio broadcast was the Wild West in the 1920s, and
I still think for the most part that the internet is kind of the Wild Wild West.
It is,
you know. Every single year, that power starts to consolidate more and more. You know, as history has proven. You know, with anything that, especially media, any kind of power, but especially media, that's the most powerful institution of a society, I believe, even more than money. I know that Rothschild said, you know, give me control of a nation's money supply, and I don't care who makes the laws. But I don't know. You know, the more I think about it. Having the media is like that's the main thing that keeps it going sometimes.
Yeah, well, when Rothschild said that, say 200 years ago or so,
right, we didn't have the Telecommunications Act yet,
and you didn't have phone, didn't internet, have telecommunications,
right? And it would have been hard to even perceive that or to imagine that.
Media would have played a much smaller part in people's lives.
True,
and so it's not just that. The media is changing, but media has been playing a larger and larger role in people's lives. Well, okay, we are coming up on we're coming up on our break. And when we come back, we're going to go into this more. And I want to talk about the role of media and finance in our lives. Okay, we will be back after the break.
know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality. Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality. Did you know that neither the American Medical Association nor the American Bar Association were established to benefit the American people? Have you recognized that in our country, healthcare has little to do with health, and that our court system has nothing to do with justice? The priests of both medicine and law have been incentivized to implement a dark agenda on behalf of the Bilderbergers and their ilk. To protect ourselves and our progeny, we need to take a much closer look at how these two giant industries really work. Join me, Al Whitney, on In Defense of Humanity, Saturdays at 7 p.m. Central, as we expose the matrix and learn how not to consent to our own destruction.
Welcome back to the show. This is the time where we do our ZioWatch news roundup. Our first story today. Trump says U.S. will withdraw from Syria very soon. President Donald Trump has announced that the U.S. will withdraw from Syria very soon, just hours after the Pentagon highlighted the need for American troops to remain in the war-torn country. "We will be coming out of Syria, like, very soon. Let the other people take care of it now," Trump said Thursday during a speech on infrastructure spending in the state of Ohio. The U.S. reportedly has more than 2,000 troops stationed in eastern Syria, in addition to several thousand others in the Arab countries north. "But we're going to be coming out of there real soon, going to get back to our country where we belong, where we want to be," Trump said. Trump also complained that the U.S. had wasted trillions of dollars in Middle East wars, but gets nothing in return. "We spent $7 trillion in the Middle East, and you know what we have for it? Nothing," Trump declared, promising to focus future U.S. spending on building jobs and infrastructure at home. Next story. Saudi de facto leader meets leaders of pro-Israeli lobbies in U.S. Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman has met with leaders of a number of pro-Israeli lobbying groups during his tour of the United States as the kingdom is moving towards normalization of diplomatic relations with the Tel Aviv regime at the expense of the Palestinian issue. According to a leaked copy of his itinerary, the Israeli Haaretz Daily reported that bin Salman has conferred with officials from the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, AIPAC, Stand Up for Israel, the ADL, the Jewish Federations of North America, the President's Conference, the B'nai B'rith, and the American Jewish Committee. AIPAC, the ADL, and the Jewish Federations of North America, or JFNA, have long fought against the pro-Palestinian movement Boycott, Divestment and Sanctions, or BDS, and they donate millions to Israel to advance its expansionist policies and construction of more settler units on occupied Palestinian territories. Speaking in an interview with France 24 television news network on December 13th, Saudi Foreign Minister Adel Al-Jubeir said that the kingdom has a roadmap to establish full diplomatic ties with Israel. Next story. U.S. involved in battlefield management of Saudi war against Yemen. That is according to Secretary of Defense Mattis. Speaking to reporters at the Pentagon on Thursday, Mattis said that the U.S. is doing the planning of Saudi Arabia's military campaign against Yemen. So this is a very dynamic sort of battlefield management, he said. Mattis also admitted that the U.S. has been involved in mid-air refueling of Saudi warplanes, claiming that the operations could help minimize civilian casualties in the war-torn country. Next story. Syrian army finds Israeli-made munitions inside militant tunnel in eastern Ghouta. The Syrian government forces have discovered a considerable amount of Israeli-made landmines and grenades left behind by Takfiri terrorist groups inside a secret underground tunnel in the eastern Ghouta region on the outskirts of the capital, Damascus. This is not the first time that the Syrian government forces have made such findings from terrorists' hideouts across the war-ravaged Arab country. Syria's official news agency, Sana, published video footage on February 27th showing a cache of Israeli-built rockets, mortars, tank shells, and other ammunition that Daesh, or ISIS terrorists, had left behind in the eastern border city of Abu Kamal, as well as Mayadin town, situated about 44 kilometers southeast of Dair al-Zawr. Next story. Syrian army prepares to go for last militant-held Ghouta town. The forces deployed in Ghouta are preparing a huge military operation in Douma if the Jaish al-Islam terrorists do not agree to hand over the city and depart, pro-Syrian government newspaper Al-Watan reported on Wednesday. A Syrian official who spoke on condition of anonymity told Reuters that the situation with regard to Douma is in a critical phase. These 2 days will be decisive, the official said. Other militant groups are leaving different parts of eastern Ghouta in convoys under deals with the government, which is now in control of some 90% of the suburban area near Damascus. However, the Jaish al-Islam Takfiri group says it will stay in Douma, which is home to tens of thousands of civilians. And our last story. Bolton updated Israel ahead of UN moves as U.S. envoy to the United Nations, according to the ex-Israeli envoy. The former Israeli envoy to the United States says John Bolton updated the Israeli government about possible UN measures against Israel. And that concludes this week's Zion Watch News Roundup.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, A visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
This is too good to be true, except this time it is real. 100%. No joke. How about a $25,000 membership to Front Sight Firearms Training Facility as a thank you bonus for a one-time donation to RBN of only $500? It is a Commander Lifetime membership with no yearly fees or dues. The training is free for the rest of your life with over 50 different classes. Then leave it to your designated beneficiary. You provide the approved firearm, holster, ammo, eye, and ear protection. Many features and bonuses are included, more than you would ever expect or believe. This is the ultimate graduation present, wedding gift, etc., etc. See the details. Go to RBN's webpage and frontsight.com to make it happen. May 5th is the last day you will hear this offer on this radio network. Help keep RBN alive. Tell 5.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Ed, you quoted the Baron von Rothschild, however we say his name, talking about give me the ability to print a nation's money and I care not who makes its laws, something to that effect. So we have, obviously, finance is powerful, but media is powerful. And does media have to obey finance because, you know, the money bags can buy and sell the companies? Or I recall during the financial crisis of 2008, for instance, Jon Stewart, the Jewish comedian on The Daily Show, calling in Jim Cramer, the Jewish guy from Mad Money, the program I watch on CNBC, but calling him in and really just kind of dressing him down, is that what you say? Because he
I don't know.
Miscalled something. Yeah, it was.
And I didn't know Jim Cramer was Jewish. Is that his real name, or did he change it?
Cramer is often a Jewish name. It can be either way.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, he's Jewish. He's a character. He's entertaining. Sometimes the Jewishness comes through.
He seems like an actor.
Yeah, I saw him talking about Twitter a couple of weeks ago, and he was saying something just in matter of fact tones. Was saying, yeah, Twitter, they're getting their act together. They're keeping hate speech off of it. They're cleaning up their act. Like, well, okay, that's a Jewish attitude.
Yeah,
but. Media has the power to incite people against the finance, against the 1%,
uh-huh.
And maybe that whole 99% movement maybe in part you could look at it as media fighting against finance. Who knows? What do you think?
That's an interesting take. Like, you said, like, this media have to obey finance. And I don't necessarily think it does, but in the instance that we have, I think it only does because it's ran by the same people, obviously. Say, for instance, if we had Goy's in charge of the, you know, the mass media in the United States, I don't think we would have a Federal Reserve that was Jewish, you know, forever.
Yeah, they'd be covered, because right now you can't say anything about the Federal Reserve being
European-style socialists. I believe that media is more powerful than money. At least at you know, today's modern day, I mean, everybody spends all day, like, in their face and in front of their phone. Or, sorry, the phone in front of their face, I mean.
And I've been saying ever since Trump was inaugurated, or maybe even before, but certainly since he was inaugurated, that I thought that he was using a divide-and-conquer strategy, and that he was attacking the media. He was taking on the media and taking on the immigration lobby, and just for fun, I'll call it the European-style socialist immigration lobby. But he was playing nice, obviously, with the super pro-Israel fanatics, and I was saying he was playing nice with Wall Street. And so there, you know, he's trying to play nice with Wall Street while attacking the media. You know, he's calling them fake news. He's not. And to the extent he's taken on some of these media, the financial companies, the big companies, today he was taken on Amazon. Maybe Amazon's a little bit safe because Jeff Bezos isn't a European-style socialist.
Yeah. There's something that I would encourage everybody to watch, and it's a documentary that was actually made by Jews, and they're bragging about how Jews created Hollywood, and like they created in a very, you know, broad sense, they created mass media in the United States.
Is that called an empire of their own? Is that
Yes, it is. That's the one. If nobody, I'm sure somebody's, hopefully a few people have heard of it, but man, that really opened up my eyes. You know, and it, you know, it's coming from a musician, and I was very interested in Hollywood. And for about a year, you know, and I live in the Midwest here, but I was considering moving to Hollywood, and there was a music school in Hollywood I wanted to go to, and I was very close to doing it. The only thing that held me back was I didn't have enough money. Of course, it's very expensive, you know, and old Philbert doesn't have a lot of funds, but that's. It was something that really opened my eyes. I encourage anybody who hasn't watched it, or, I mean, I'm sure somebody out there may think, oh, well, you know, Goy used to be in charge of the industry. No, they weren't. They never were. Like, not completely. I mean, we may have had more Goys in the industry, you know, 30, 40 years ago, for sure. But, I mean, this is a documentary, you know, written by Jews bragging about how Jews created Hollywood. And they did. The only Goy in there was Walt Disney. They couldn't wait when he died, you know. As soon as he died, they got bought out. Everything got bought out. Now, well, Disney is more Jewish than CNN.
Oh, that's right. Here's something else I'm going to throw out when we're comparing financial world to the media world. I think the media world is much more Jewish, or shall I say much more European-style socialist. I think I like that meme compared to finance, because you look at all the big media companies, and, you know, the one exception you can find is Fox, and a lot of people will say, well, actually, you know, Rupert Murdoch's mother was a European-style socialist. I haven't found any conclusive proof. It could be either way. But with the big banks, I mean, and financial companies, there's plenty that aren't Jewish. There's plenty, like, you know, Merrill Lynch is traditionally not Jewish. There's lots that aren't Jewish. There's enough that are. And, it really doesn't have to be all of them to be. I mean, I think if you have what you'd call a critical mass that are Jewish, so that they can, you know, they can exchange information with each other, you know, there's in effect, insider information, and they're so big at the very pinnacle, where you're talking about the Federal Reserve that they ran. not just in terms of the chairman, but, you know, often the vice chairman, a majority often of the people on the board of governors, but I'm sure lots and lots of staffers. And then, you know, the IMF, which has often been, not always, but it's at least sometimes, the head of the IMF is by tradition a European. And when I say European, I don't mean European-style socialist as a euphemism for Jew. I mean, it's European, but sometimes it's European Jew. You had that Strauss-Kahn guy for a number of years. And the World Bank in particular is often run by Jews. A lot of these institutions are. But with the media, it really is almost all run by Jews. With the banks, you know, there are big banks, and of course you have the big Rothschild family, but there's lots and lots that aren't. I still think it doesn't matter if a majority are run by non-Jews because of Jewish networking.
I mean, pretty much all the investment banks are, all the major investment banks are, for sure.
And then you wonder about somebody like Jamie.
I mean, like, not the commercial banks, not all of them. I mean, all the big ones, yes, but I don't think,
well, yeah, I mean,
I don't think U.S. Bank has any Jews on their, like, their board. I've actually looked at that. J.P. Morgan does, for sure. I'm not sure about Chase. Oh, but I haven't looked, but okay.
So you mentioned Chase. That's Jamie Dimon's bank, right? Or no, J.P. Morgan's.
J.P. Morgan.
J.P. Morgan's Jamie Dimon's bank. And, you know, there's discussion about whether or not Jamie Dimon is Jewish, because you'll see people say, oh, well, he's Greek. But if I looked on Wikipedia, and his parents or his grandparents who came from Thessalonica in Greece, which if you look, you can look into the history of that town, and that was around the turn of the century, that was about 40% Jewish. And, you know, when you've got a 40% Jewish town in Europe, it's usually those are the elites. Those are the people that would be immigrating to the United States and be involved in finance. That also is the area where the bulk of the Young Turks came from. who when I say Young Turks, I don't mean that guy Cenk Uygur. I mean
yeah, right.
Yeah, Mustafa Ataturk, who took over. Or Mustafa Kemal.
I couldn't
Kemal,
help but to like picture his face as soon as you said the Young Turks. That's bad.
Oh, and that guy, he's just
a chubby little lying face.
And getting back to what we were talking about in the first part of the show.
Yeah, sorry.
He did a segment on the, you know, shooting of this Stefan Clark, and of course it's all outraged. So that's as much as I'm going to say about him. Okay, now there was a huge move in the bond market today.
Yeah, there was. It moved. There was so much cash that dumped into the bond market today that the 10-year yield went down again, yet again. I have it written down here, 2.74.
So, what would that be? I haven't heard.
It's hard to say, but I think it's investment banks that are pouring money into the bond market, because the bond market has been there generally to make sure everything's even, or, you know, fair price in the stock market. And then when you know, when it's off, it's all uneven. It's like the teeter totter, you know. You have the fat kid or the fat guy on one side. You can't even it out. Anyway, that's kind of how I look at it.
Well, here's
and the stock market went up too because of that. It went up so much, yeah, like I said, the yield went down. That's amazing.
Well, it's been very, very, like, this past couple of months have been choppy. This week was very choppy. And I don't know if this was the case or not, but this is the type of thing, from my experience, you know, covering the financial markets, this is the type of thing that can happen. Today was the last trading day of the year, of the fiscal quarter. And so all of these institutions are going to have to report their results to their shareholders and stakeholders. And it's not unusual to see a lot of profit taking at the end of the year. It's sometimes
right.
It's called winter.
Yeah, we're expecting a sell-off right now, not a buying.
Well, you had certainly this week you had an awful lot of selling, and you had buying. Yet it was very volatile, but you had 2 days this week where you had just really massive sell-offs in the stock market. And So I wouldn't be.
It's just amazing to me that the bond market went up. It went up, and the Fed's going to raise rates. I mean, it doesn't make sense. I mean, that's why I think it has to be investment banks. I mean, people aren't going to be doing that. I mean, you're not going to put your money in the dollar. Everybody knows the dollar is a dying asset.
Well,
you're not going to be buying bonds when they're raising rates. You know, I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. I mean, so where are you going to put your money? In the stock market. So, like, the people that are investing are putting in the stock market, and the bond market went up so much today. I mean, that, like, nobody else could have done that but central banks. It's amazing. And today, I mean, Thursday, I know this is airing on Friday. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, here's an idea, and this is just an idea, and I haven't gotten it through the financial press or anything, but I wouldn't be surprised if there was a lot of window dressing. It's the type of thing that they do at the end of every quarter. You want to be able to show profits, and so you take profits. So you have sold off a fair amount of shares, and there has been a lot of selling of shares. And then, what are you going to do with that? You're not going to leave it in cash, so it goes into bonds. And I wouldn't be surprised, although, you know, again, the regular weekly disclaimer, don't take anything I say as advice, but I wouldn't be surprised to see a lot of the money that went into bonds, that it was just going in just for a place to sit for a while. I wouldn't be surprised if then those positions start being liquidated in April, early in April, and the funds go elsewhere, maybe back into the stock market, or maybe overseas, who knows. How's the currency markets been doing?
I don't know. I've been living under a rock when it comes to that.
Okay. Well, I mean, I
believe the dollar index is up.
Yeah.
I just saw that bond market, and it just blew me back. But I believe the dollar went up with that. It's crazy. Yeah, it's like, I don't know.
Like, the dollar did strengthen some, yeah.
Sorry, what?
Well, I was just saying, I saw it strengthen a certain amount against the yen. It's a little higher now than it was last time we recorded.
I always feel nervous buying dollars, you know, but I've only done it a few times. And, you know, it's nobody wants to buy, like I said, it's a dying asset. You don't want to buy a dying asset, but and then something like this happens. So if you happen to short the dollar, something like this happens, which is complete BS. And it's completely rigged. I mean, and it sucks. I mean, you can't play the game. And that's what they're trying to make it for. You can't play the game.
Well, here's other things that I guess to watch out for. And of course, a lot of my experience is really, really dated from 25 or 30 years ago. But in the currency markets, we used to see a lot of central bank intervention to move the dollar up, you know, to strengthen it, to weaken it, what have you. You'd see central bank intervention, and you'd also see movements by sometimes by big speculators like George Soros. George Soros was very active back in the 90s in trying to corner markets, especially for smaller currencies, whether it's, you know, Malaysia or Singapore or Ireland or whatever. But especially with what's going on with China, and China has a pegged currency, but having a pegged currency doesn't necessarily insulate you from what's going on in the markets. The Hong Kong dollar is openly traded, even though it's pegged, and you could have pressures put on either Chinese yuan or surrogates for it, like the Hong Kong dollar, in order to put pressure on China for other things, for trade, for North Korea. And so that's something to watch out for. And especially with President Trump, I think he's may well be the type of person to be willing to use financial markets and the currency market in particular. He might not be bashful about using it. And I don't know if, you know, it's typically run through the Fed, through the New York Fed, but I guess the Treasury Department can be involved as well. It gets run through the Federal Reserve, through the New York Fed. But it's something to watch out for, a more the foreign exchange in particular to be used as a, you know, tool of diplomacy, so to speak.
Yeah, do you remember, like, maybe about, I think it's either 3 or 4 years ago, it's quite a while ago, when the Chinese government devalued the yuan, like, quite a bit overnight. I don't remember precisely how much, but it was enough to, like, you know, make people lose all their money and blow up their accounts. I don't know when that was, but anyway, I think, not that Trump's going to do that, I don't think he's going to do that, but I think he wants a weaker dollar, because for the same reason the Chinese did that, I guess is what I'm getting at. And it's because, you know, they're an exporter, it's easier to buy their goods when they have a cheap currency or a cheaper currency. And, you know, he wants to produce more.
Okay, let's go to the break, and we'll finish up on the other side.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 today.
For the past 14 years, it's been my privilege to host the National Intel Report on RBN, to offer a platform to interview exceptional guests, to provoke critical thought, and examine evidence, whether real, fake, or somewhere in between, and allow our audience to call in and participate with your input and questions, in order to help us all reach an educated decision and arrive at our own truth. Our world has changed. It's now been turned on its head. Real is now considered fake, and mainstream fake is now pushed as real, rather than any clear thinking, consensus, or rationale.
Those few remaining beacons of light, the ones still shining through the mainstream media lies, propaganda, and deception, are being viciously attacked at every level through attempts at censorship, threatening advertisers, jailing hosts, and even killing journalists brave enough to speak the truth to you. We are in a war for our very freedom and existence, and through these despicable acts, freedom haters, collectivists, and communitarians have shown they will stop at nothing to blot out these last few beacons of light. Truth is becoming increasingly more difficult to unmask, just as the term unmasking itself is spoken by those usually anonymous sources. They promote their lies, wishing to mask the truths by ignoring it, vilifying it, or conspiratorializing it into a black hole abyss.
Regrettably, RBN has reached the tipping point, and through internal audit and actuarial review, it has now been determined that the only life raft of survival to this network is to go the way of PBS, that being audience-supported. Like a cornered animal, the left with veracity is pulling out all the stops with every effort to effectively blacken our beacon forever. Help us, folks. Help yourselves. Don't let our light stop shining. Our motto has always been, because you can handle the truth. It's time to review your budget, folks. If you want the truth to keep flowing through RBN, go to republicbroadcasting.org and become a regular monthly donor of 30, 40, 50, or 100 or more a month and ensure you keep the truth flowing.
And welcome back to the show. Well, in these last few minutes, we were talking about currencies and maybe some unusual currencies. Maybe they're pegged, or maybe they just don't have particularly big markets. And so you do currency trading. And
I have, yeah.
Yeah. And how about these more obscure currencies?
A lot of them tend to have higher spreads. And the spread is, you know, how much you're, like, when you buy, where the sell mark is. So basically it's the ground you have to cover before you're going to make any profit. The money that you pay your broker, you know, for the privilege of getting into the market. So, you know, there's no commission on currency trading at all. The broker makes their money, but every time you trade, they get a little bit of that money. And they determine, you know, how much that is by what the volatility, and there's a lot of stuff. And it's constantly moving, too. And, you know, if it moves, when you get into a trade, if it moves, that's called a swap. You know, and it could either move into your favor or out of your favor. But one time I had it move out of my favor, and it made me so mad because they had basically taken all my profit by moving the spread. But anyway, the smaller currencies that were pegged, like what you were talking about, pegged currencies where the government will take action if a currency gets to a certain level, the spreads on those make it untradeable. I mean, you're going to buy a half of a lot, which is 50,000 units. That's 100,000 units is a lot, so that'd be 50,000 units of a currency. If you buy half of a lot, you're going to pay sometimes, you know, $50 to $60, you know, depending on where that spread is at. That's unbelievable. It's going to have to move up an unimaginable, you know, a distance for you to make any money or just to even make up the spread. So they make it untradeable. And
so to give people an idea of the spread, if you've gone to the airport, sometimes you pass by the foreign currency desk at the airport and they'll have the sign with all the flags, and you know, it might have the Australian flag and you know, the rate, it might show how would it be quoted, like 90.50 you know, it might say buy 90.50, sell 92.50, and so there you got the 2 cent,
right, 2 cents, that's the spread.
Yeah, 2 cent spread. And when you go to the airport, you'll see, and of course, if you look at more obscure currencies like the Kuwaiti currency or the Thai currency or the Czech currency, the spreads, instead of being like 2 cents, they might wind up being 10 cents or 15 cents in those environments. Now, the currency markets, you said there's no commission. And even in the big banks, and of course, it's very uncentralized, and they rely a lot on telecommunications and phones. And I guess computers nowadays, my experience, I remember going into a big bank, and there was actually a broker in the bank who was dealing with people, not just who worked at that bank, but was also connected with all sorts of other people by phone. And somebody who, say a currency trader at a big bank, they don't just say, I want to buy something. They have to make a market. So, you know, they'll say, you know, what is it, 2030. They'll say maybe like 15 at 2030, and the 15 means $15 million, and the 2030, let's just say you're talking about dollar yen, and if the going rate is about 120, so that one means 120.20, 120.30, and you just make a market. Now, if you really want to buy, you make the market so that it's attractive to a seller, not a buyer. And if you really want to buy, you make the market so it's attractive to a buyer and not a seller, or a seller and not a buyer. And but so the spreads are typically would be like a tenth of a penny. But you know, when there's a lot of volatility and all, the spreads get wider.
Yeah, I mean, and in Forex, you're, like I said, you're moving hundreds of thousands of dollars, because I mean, you have to leverage in Forex to, you know, be able to make any money.
Right.
That's one reason why it's attractive to a lot of people, especially a lot of laymen that, you know, want to get in the game.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's episode. We'll be back again next week with...
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.